This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, August 16th, 2021. Today will be better than yesterday. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home. No, I'm not, actually. I'm on vacation. I'm up in the Adirondacks at the old family place.
It's camp only week here on the podcast. Buster taking vacation, but also still kind of working. Very Buster only for you to pull this maneuver off here.
Yeah, I just like the idea of keeping the conversation. You know, I wake up in the mornings. I'm not watching as much. Like, I was texting back and forth during the Sunday night game with Alex Rodriguez, and I just apologize. Like, I'm not watching the game. I'm actually, we had dinner, and then there was family game, and getting up early, going to jump off a place called Divers Rock today.
Nice.
So very excited, and Alex, I think, commiserate. He understood that I wasn't watching the game as much, but it's nice to get up on a Monday after, you know, seeing what happened over the weekend and talk some baseball.
I respect it. You're an addict and you need your fix. So here we are.
Exactly. So let's talk about the Padres activating Fernando Tatis Jr. But of course, he's not playing shortstop. He played right field against the Diamondbacks. And he did what Fernando Tatis Jr. tends to do when he plays.
2-1, and that's hit in the air out to deep left field. Peralta's going back. He's looking up. This one is going to go. Welcome back, Fernando. For the third time this year, he homers in his first at-bat off the injured list, and the Padres take a 1-0 lead here in the third. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that stat. He homers for the first at-bat three different times coming off the injured list as he deals with his shoulder. That sound from 97.3, the fan, and he wasn't done in this game.
And the 2-0 changeup to Fernando is hung and hit in the air out to deep left field again. Peralta going back. He's at the wall. It's going to go. Another one for Fernando. He's 3-for-3 with a couple of homers and a double in his return. And the Padres are back in front 2-1. And we are out of words.
And they go on to win the game 8-2. The Yankees lost the Field of Dreams game on Thursday, but then they beat the White Sox on Saturday. And on Sunday, they took a lead.
2-0-2, the lefty swinging Odor, and he hits a long drive to right center. It is high, it is far, that is gone. A two-run home run for Rugi Odor. The Yankees have a 2-0 lead. J'adore Odor.
John Sterling at WFAN, and the Yankees win that game 5-3, a nice series for New York. Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager, announced on Sunday that Gerrit Cole will be activated off the COVID-19 injured list, and he will start against the Angels tonight. At the end of the weekend, which saw the return of Chris Sale versus the hapless Orioles, the Rays lead the Red Sox by 3 games in the American League East, the Yankees by 5.5, the Blue Jays by 7.5. The Indians and the Tigers, and Tristan McKenzie was outstanding, carrying a perfect game into the 8th inning.
A swing and a line drive, base hit right field. Harold Castro breaks up the perfect game with a 2-out single to right. And the Tiger fans have something to cheer about. What an effort by McKenzie. All of the Indians players clapping and standing in the first base dugout.
Yeah, he was tremendous. That, of course, Tom Hamilton, WTAM 1100. The Los Angeles Angels designated outfielder Adam Eaton for assignment after 25 games with the team. The Dodgers and the Mets run Sunday Night Baseball, and the Dodgers took control early.
Swing and a ball drilled out towards left center field. That's well struck. That's back, and that is gone. Home run for Justin Turner. He pulls it in the air out to left center. And the Dodgers have jumped out. It is 2-0.
Boog Sciambi on ESPN Radio, and it got really ugly. The Dodgers wind up winning this game 14-4, sweep the Mets over the weekend. At the end of the weekend, they trail the San Francisco Giants by 4 games in the National League West. The Mets, on the other hand, falling behind the Atlanta Braves in the National League East because Dansby Swanson has been red hot.
Espino deals. This one's barreled to straightaway center field. Going back, Robles at the wall. We're going to need a new baseball. Dansby Swanson does it again, this time to straightaway center field. That is his third home run in his last 4 ABs, and it's his fourth home run in this series.
That from 680, the fan. In the 5th inning, the Braves went back-to-back.
He's given up two and four-plus innings today and maybe another. Riley puts a charge in one, and Thomas is not even going to go to the wall on this one. That goes over the Braves' bullpen and into the bleachers. Austin Riley goes back-to-back with Freddie. 5-3 Atlanta.
So after the Braves' 6-5 win, Atlanta in first place in the National League East, a game over the Phillies, 2.5 ahead of the fading Mets. News that broke over the weekend, according to the Washington Post, Trevor Bauer was given a protective order by an Ohio woman in 2020. He denied that allegation. According to the Post, he allegedly punched and choked a woman during sex and made a death threat toward her. Bauer denied the allegations on Twitter, saying the newspaper was attempting to create a quote-unquote false narrative, while his agent said he and the Ohio woman were in a consensual relationship for 3 years, and she was attempting to extort him. On Saturday night, this happened.
So Tyler Gilbert, one out away from a no-hitter. He gets his sign, goes into his full windup in the first pitch, and a line drive center field. Marte's there. He's got it. No-hitter. Tyler Gilbert, in his first major league start, has no-hit the Padres. The Diamondbacks rush onto the field. They mob him. And what a night. For the first time in the history of this ballpark, the Diamondbacks have had a pitcher throw a no-hitter in a Diamondback uniform. Tyler Gilbert, 27 years old, a no-hitter on this Saturday night, August 14th.
It was the eighth no-hitter of the season, matching the major league record set in 1884. The first season overhand pitching was allowed.
Buster, before we move on to our pal Tim Kirkchin, don't forget we have a special offer for ESPN Plus subscribers. Subscribers can join an ESPN Plus fantasy football league right now for a chance to win $250,000. Sweepstakes is U.S. only, 18 or older, no purchase necessary. Visit ESPN.com/ESPN Plus football rules for full details and official rules, and check out ESPN's newest podcast, Black History Always. Black History Always is a new podcast in partnership with The Undefeated that takes a deep dive into the stories of now and tomorrow from Black Aperture that empower and inspire. That's Black History Always. Listen wherever you find your podcasts.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirkchin.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirkchin covers baseball for ESPN, which means he's eminently qualified to answer this question about Taylor. Okay, Tim, he told us just before we got started today, he's going to be officiating a wedding. And I am not one who in a position to have a ton of advice other than don't choke. What advice would you give for him, Tim?
Just get to the point. Okay. It's a wedding. All right. Don't try to open with a joke. Don't try to be the master of ceremonies. Just make sure that you say all the right words because somebody is getting married. Okay. This is really important to these people. I've seen guys get up there and say, hey, they open with a joke. That's not a good idea. You can be fun. You can be festive because it's a wedding. It's a celebration. But it can't be about you, Taylor. And I'm not suggesting for a second it will be, but it can't be about you. It has to be about the couple.
Taylor, you taking notes?
Oh, yeah. I think that's great, actually. I'd kind of been on the fence about, you know, how kind of jovial or like jokey I should be. So I appreciate that, Tim. Those are good notes to take as I'm getting my act together over here.
Man, Tim, it seems like you've seen a lot of those situations where somebody's officiating a wedding.
I've seen a few. My brother did one of them, and he was great because he made it exclusively about the couple, which is all that matters.
All right. Taylor, any other, you going to pick his brain at some point, Taylor?
Oh, yeah, we'll talk. I mean, Tim's a great writer. So, you know, maybe, Tim, maybe I can give you some notes of what I got going on over here.
All right.
Happy Tim, to help, Taylor.
Oh, Tim, what do you got going on tonight on a broadcast?
Well, we've got the A's and the White Sox, two teams that would be in the playoffs if the season ended today. The A's have won 8 out of 10. They're a really good team again. Their pitching has been really good, especially lately. Starling Marte has added a new element to their outfield, speed, everything. I like the way that team plays, and I think they're going to make the playoffs one way or another, either as division winner or a wild card. Meanwhile, the White Sox they're just so loaded with talent. Now with, you know, Robert and Jimenez back, their offense is devastating at times, and yet their pitching is just so overpowering. Another example yesterday, all the strikeouts, even though they lost that game, they struck out 16 Yankees. I really like the White Sox. I really like the A's, and both of them, I'm certain, are going to the playoffs.
ESPN announced the other day that on August 29th, we will be broadcasting on Sunday Night Baseball, the game between the Yankees and the Athletics in Oakland, which will be fun. It's always fun to go into that ballpark. Do you think there's a chance they could run down Houston for the American League West? Because I've been a little bit surprised that Houston hasn't taken control of that division.
Right. They're only 2.5 out. So, yes, the answer is they could catch the Astros. Now, I still love the Astros, and the Astros are going to the playoffs. I'm certain about that, too. But this division, I thought, was in control of the Astros, and now the A's are inching up. They have the exact same record at home this year as they do on the road. They're a very consistent team. And Bob Melvin's one of the best managers in the game. I'm not sure everyone recognizes that, but they got that team going in the right direction. And Matt Chapman's starting to swing it. So, yes, I think they can catch the Astros. But one way or another, two teams from the West, I believe, are going to the playoffs.
It feels like that what happened yesterday with Fernando Tatis Jr., with him coming back and immediately hitting two home runs, tells you, you know what, this could absolutely work, and he could be a difference-making player down the stretch, because it's not like he's easing his way back in, Tim, and he's sort of finding his swing. Like, right away, he's an impact player.
Right. First game he's ever played, Buster, other than at shortstop, the first defensive position in his career, and he hits two home runs and a double. And the swings he took were the classic violent swings by Fernando Tatis Jr., not a guy favoring that shoulder in any way. So I fully expect him to be a great player the rest of the way, as long as he stays healthy. And I'm in the minority on this, but I think there's a better chance he stays healthy playing the outfield than he does playing the infield. It's easier to jam that shoulder or get hurt playing in the infield. Unless he makes some ridiculous diving try or runs into a wall, I think he's going to be safer in the outfield. So maybe this is the thing to do. Keep him out there, keep him healthy, and let him swing the bat.
Now, you said you're in the minority. What voices have you been hearing? Because I completely agree with you, and I think it's easy for the Padres to tell him, you know, as we move forward, look, we love you. We love your passion. We know that, you know, you could potentially make diving catches, but stay on your feet. Don't leave your feet. What do you think?
Well, maybe I'm listening to the wrong people, but I just know when Mookie Betts was moved to second base recently because of the hip injury, they said less wear and tear on his body at second base as opposed to right field. And I couldn't disagree more. Maybe there's more running in right field, but there's less chance of a collision in the outfield. So I think it's the right thing to do, putting him in the outfield and just letting him hit.
All right, let's talk about the National League East, the Atlanta Braves moving into first place. I got to say, if the Braves actually wind up winning this division and making the playoffs, I just don't see a reasonable path where they could potentially go deep into the playoffs in the World Series potentially, Tim. But I got to say, to me, it would be one of the most amazing jobs, not only Brian Snitker, their manager, but also Alex Anthopoulos, their general manager, in terms of how he made all these series of trades, got the team a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better, you know, and making those deals even after Ronald Acuna Jr. got hurt.
Yeah, they're in first place, Buster. They've won 10 out of 12. They look like the Braves team that mashes you like they did most of last year. Now, obviously, Noah Acuña Jr. is an enormous loss, but they Anthopoulos added four outfielders at the trade deadline. No one's ever done that in the history of the trade deadline. And they added some relief help. And now, you know, they're second in the league in home runs. Ozzie Albies hit a home run four games in a row. Dansby Swanson has 24 homers. It's the most ever by a Brave shortstop in any season in the history of the franchise. And, you know, Freddie Freeman's a great player, and he's going to get hot down the stretch. But their best player, now that Acuña's been out, has been Austin Riley at third base. He's been really good. So I'm with you. I don't know how they pitch their way through, you know, the gauntlet that they're going to face in the National League playoffs if they get there. But they can hit with a lot of teams right now, and they're dangerous. And you're right. It's been a really impressive job by the Braves through all those injuries to be in first place in the East at the moment.
Remember how long it was a thing that they couldn't get to 500, couldn't get over 500. They're now six games over 500, 62-56. According to Fangraphs, their odds of making the playoffs are 47.2%. The Phillies in second place, one game behind at 41%. And in third place, the New York Mets, now 2.5 games behind after getting obliterated by the Dodgers over the weekend. Their chances for making the playoffs at 16.3%. Tim, I just don't see them getting off the mat. It feels like that between the struggles of their offense and the inevitability that they're going to get almost nothing out of Jacob deGrom in a best case scenario for the rest of the year, I don't know how they recover, especially in the face of this incredible schedule they're facing.
Yeah, I'm not on board with the Mets. Sorry, I'm with you. Buster, I never used to believe in strength of schedule, even though that's one of your favorite things. But I'm telling you, the last 3 years, I'm completely on board. 3 years ago, the Red Sox beat the Orioles by 61 games in the division. And really, ever since then, the gap between the best teams and the worst teams is now larger than I can ever remember. It's almost like it's an upset now when a really bad team beats a really good team. And since the trade deadline, we have a lot of really bad teams out there. Buster, since the trade deadline, we've had 23 games that have been decided by 10 or more runs. Now, it's not all the teams that unloaded, but that's way too many blowout games. And this is part of the problem, is that the Phillies, for the Mets at least, are playing a bunch of lousy teams, and that's going to help them. And the Mets are playing a lot of good teams, and that's going to hurt them. Again, I used to say, hey, this is baseball. Any bad team can beat a good team on any day. And yes, that still kind of exists, but not like it used to. And now the gap is so large that the Mets played a Sunday night game, and now they're going to San Francisco to play that team. That's a really difficult run, and they're still not done with the Dodgers yet. So it's a really tough spot.
The note that we got overnight from ESPN Stats and Information, the Mets are in the midst of 13 straight games against the Dodgers and Giants. According to the Elias Sports Bureau, they're the first team to play 13 straight games against teams with a 600 win percentage or better, at least 100 games into a season since the 1980 Blue Jays. Toronto in that stretch went 4-9 against the Yankees and the Orioles. So the Mets are definitely swimming upstream. And Tim, they're doing it without Jacob deGrom. I've said 1,000 times, and I'll say it 1,001 times. The teams are not obligated. The players are not obligated to tell us exactly what's wrong with them. We are not obligated to believe what they tell us. I would say from the outside looking in that when you look at the tea leaves of how he's being handled, where the Mets, Luis Rojas announces on Friday that, you know what, he's going to be shut down for two more weeks. He's not even picking up a baseball. He at the soonest would begin to throw a baseball at the end of August. I think you would agree with me. That means at most he would be potentially a relief role at the very end of the regular season or in the postseason. There's not enough time for him to build up innings. And on top of that, Tim, it has all the earmarks, all the information we're getting, elbow issue, forearm discomfort, going out to see Dr. Neil Elitrosh, you know, a noted surgeon. It has all the earmarks of somebody who is closing in on a decision whether or not to have an elbow procedure. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm really worried for Jacob DeGrom and the Mets' sake, because this doesn't sound good and this doesn't look good. And it's just another reminder, Buster. I mean, we were rightfully comparing this guy to Bob Gibson earlier this season. And we should have, because that first half was a joke. Nobody's ever done anything quite like he was doing, the combination of precision and power. But it just reminds you again how long a season lasts. Bob Gibson threw 304 innings in 1968. Jacob DeGrom's not even going to get to 100 this year, probably because of his issues. And I think it really hurts the game, but mostly it hurts the Mets, because that guy, when he goes out there, changes the entire rotation, changes the entire week. And I don't like the looks of this, that if he comes back at all this year, you got to think logically it's going to be a limited role.
Do you agree with me that when you look at some of the details that we're hearing about it, that it has all the earmarks of somebody facing a major elbow issue?
Well, Buster, shutdown is a bad word. Elbow is a bad word. Forearm is a bad word. You put all these together, and yeah, I think that's where you're headed. But let's just hope for his sake and for the team's sake that's not the case. But I'm not encouraged for the Mets.
So speaking of the Mets, as you mentioned, they play in San Francisco later today. Noah Syndergaard, you know, longtime pitcher for them, sent a post on Instagram over the weekend where he was reflecting some anger that the Mets game last night was placed on Sunday Night Baseball in the day before the Mets were to begin a series out in San Francisco. That game last night was in New York at Citi Field. What he sent out: hey, MLB, ESPN, whose dumb effing idea was it to change Sunday's game to a night game when we're traveling to the West Coast after? Won't get in until Monday morning. Take on the first place Giants later that evening. Brilliant. The one thing I would say, and I've had these conversations with players before, Tim, if I talked to Noah, I'd say, hey, Noah, it's not MLB and ESPN. It's also the union that represents you. Like, they sign on for that. And part of the compensation package that these players, all the players, benefit from is based on the television rights. And so every time we see a complaint like this, you feel like going, you know what? Call Tony Clark. We got a CBA negotiation coming up. If the players see a problem with it, that to me seems to be more productive than complaining on social media.
Yeah, look, this is a difficult spot. We already talked about it. You got to play a team like that on Sunday night, then fly across the country. Not easy, but you're right. It's a Sunday night game. This is part of the landscape, and you have to deal with it, and it's not going to be easy. But complaining about it doesn't do much good when it's all about the money anyway, and a lot of that money goes to the players. So tricky spot, and I understand the frustration, but you're not getting anywhere with a complaint like that.
No. Chris Sale returned on Saturday. He was excellent against the Baltimore Orioles. I think Taylor, would you agree? We need to qualify. If anyone does well against Baltimore, we have to say, yes, it was against the Orioles, considering how they're playing right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Them and the Cubs, I feel like, are the two teams with the asterisks next to their names right now when you're looking at the box score.
But either way, if you're the Red Sox, you're relieved because Chris Sale looked great, Tim.
Yeah, 89 pitches, 60 strikes, Buster, which is pretty darn good for a guy who essentially hadn't pitched in 2 years after Tommy John. And yes, I agree, the Orioles are terrible, but they're mostly terrible with their pitching. Their lineup can still knock you around once in a while with some of the hitters they have, and Mancini and Mullins and Mountcastle and those guys. And Chris Sale was really good. You know, 5 innings, 6 hits, no walks, 8 strikeouts. And we've talked about this, Buster. He's no longer just a luxury. He's a necessity. He's going to have to give them something like that almost every start out from here till October if they're going to hang on and make the playoffs. But I would be thoroughly encouraged, no matter who he's throwing against, with Chris Sale's first start, based on the number of strikes he threw, the velocity of his four-seamer, and I saw a couple sliders he threw that were nasty. They looked like the old Chris Sale to some degree. So it was a really good first start for a guy who hasn't been out there in a long time.
And I think the Orioles series for Boston could not have come at a better time. Like, they needed some stability in their performance, and so they get to play the Orioles. They had a really good weekend. You know, seeing the quotes from Alex Cora, their manager, he talked about, hey, you know, this is baseball, and you know, you move forward and you're collecting momentum. And I think it's important too, Tim, because I feel like the Yankees are starting to do that way. They had a really nice series in the end, despite losing the Field of Dreams game against the White Sox by winning the last two games. And then they got Gerrit Cole coming back today.
Yeah, they're 19-9, Buster, since the All-Star break. They have the best record in the American League since the All-Star game. And now, arguably, the best pitcher in the American League returns tonight. I mean, I know the Yankees have been a disappointment on a lot of levels, and it's been an extraordinarily difficult year for them. But they're right there in this playoff race, not just because of what Brian Cashman did at the trade deadline, but they've shown a little bit of grit here that I'm not sure everyone thought they had. And now you got to look and say the Yankees can make the playoffs, where a month ago, I'm not sure they could until they made a couple trades and got a couple people healthy. Now they have to have Gerrit Cole be lights out the rest of the way because their pitching still is not that good.
So before you go, I want to talk to you about what I think is a shift in culture in baseball in regards to domestic violence situations. This jumping off point on this is the report of a second potential incident, alleged incident involving Trevor Bauer. Washington Post reports that Bauer was given a temporary order of protection last year in Ohio after allegedly punching and choking a woman during sex. Bauer strongly denies it. We'll see, Tim, as we move forward, what happens with his case here, if there's anything follow up there, and if there's, with the other case, we don't know what's going to happen yet. So I want to sort of broaden this out generally about my sense of how teams are looking at, players who are involved in cases of domestic violence. Tim, I think there is less and less patience as time goes on for the employment of players involved in cases like that. And I'll hold up as an example, Roberto Osuna, okay, who I looked into today, Tim, and it shocked me to realize that Roberto Osuna is 26 years old. This is not someone who's 37, 38 years old. But you know what happened when he was with the Toronto Blue Jays. He wound up getting a suspension under baseball's domestic violence policy. When he was available for trade, only one team was interested, the Houston Astros. He gets traded to Houston. By all accounts, after he joined the team, when you talk to his teammates, folks who were in that staff, they talk about, you know what, he was an ideal citizen after he joined the Astros. But then they had that incident after the Astros won a clinching game, in which the former assistant general manager of the Astros was yelling stuff at some reporters in the clubhouse, which brought more attention to Ozuna's case. Tim, he's out of the umbrella of Major League Baseball right now. 26 years old, in Mexico, 24 games, a 1.46 ERA, 3 walks, 27 strikeouts. And let's face it, there is a chance, if it was only about baseball, that he potentially could help another team in Major League Baseball. But I just get the sense in recent years, the more you talk to front office officials, the more they hear from players and maybe, family members of players, there's a sense of, you know what, we don't need a guy who's got that sort of track record. We don't want a guy who's got that sort of track record on our team. What's your sense?
I think you're right, Buster. And again, Trevor Bauer is going to have his day in court today, and we're going to let the legal system tell us what to do here. But no matter what the legal system says, I have sensed from talking to some people with the Dodgers that they're just not interested in getting Trevor Bauer back at any point here, either soon or next year or whatever. It's like they've distanced themselves from him because of the potential violations here. I know when we talked to Dave Roberts, this was a very sensitive issue. Obviously, this is a terrible thing to talk about. But when we asked him in a pregame chat, this is a couple weeks after Bauer's initial issue, and Dave Roberts hadn't even spoken to him, almost like we need to put him over there and let somebody else figure this out, and then we'll figure out what to do after that. But I'm with you. This is just not comfortable for any team to bring in a player that has any connection like that.
And generally speaking, Tim, I think that's a great development in the sport.
Well, you and I, of course, that's the point. Right.
Yeah. You and I have heard stories through the years of players who, did horrific acts, with a spouse, with a child. And the general response was, well, you know, we don't have any control over this. They have their day in court, and they would sort of hide behind that. And now I think the perspective is, you know what, this is a private business. And if we don't want to employ someone with an ugly history, then we're not going to. And I think that's what is increasingly happening in the sport. I heard in the last 3 years of an incident in which a player was involved in this. When Starlin Castro, his name popped up in one of these cases, you could not have been more aggressive than Mike Rizzo and Dave Martinez weren't talking about how they didn't want Starlin Castro around.
Right. And again, today's players are different than the players of 30 years ago. And the world is different than it was 30 years ago. This is not being critical of anyone 30 years ago, but today's players are much more in tune with what's going on. Whether you like the internet and Twitter, a lot of people don't like it. I get it. But these players know what's going on far more often. And I don't think they want any part of guys that have been involved in something like this. There's far less tolerance in the clubhouse than there used to be.
Yeah. So a player who gets involved in cases such as this, not only are they facing a potential suspension, but potentially the end of their careers as the culture within baseball shifts. All right, Tim, thanks for doing this. Have fun on the broadcast tonight.
Okay, Buster. Thanks. See you soon.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Last week, I caught up with Trey Turner of the Dodgers and went rapid fire. Give a listen.
After the trade with the Dodgers went down, what can you tell us about that first conversation you had with Max Scherzer about the two of you going out to L.A.?
I remember calling him just to see, you know, how he's getting out there, where he was going to live. And I just remember hearing how excited he was and pumped he was to, you know, join the team. And, you know, that got me fired up, too. You know, the trade was weird for me and just, you know, different and change of teams. But to hear the excitement in his voice got me excited. And, you know, I'm glad we're here. I'm glad we're competing to, you know, win a championship.
What's it been like with the Dodgers so far, being a hired gun who drops in the middle of a season?
Yeah, it's been different. I got a chance to talk to these guys at the All-Star game a little bit. So, familiar with Doc from the Padres days. And now I get a chance to play with all these guys and they're such good baseball players and such a good team, but also good people over here. And, you know, I couldn't be more excited.
You had a smooth slide that got a lot of attention on social media the other day. What can you tell us about that?
I've been sliding like that for a long time. I guess everybody just picked up on that one. I tried to not hit the ground very hard because, you know, some fields are a little tough, and get up off the ground as quick as I can with the pop-up slide. And I guess it looked pretty slick, and everybody ate it up.
You met your wife, Kristen, at NC State, where she was a gymnast. How much do you guys compete against each other?
We have the argument every so often, maybe once a year, what's harder, baseball or gymnastics. So we go back and forth there. I can't argue. She's probably more athletic than me. I can tell you that with all the skills that she did throughout her life and at NC State as well. I enjoy watching gymnastics now, and she's taught me a lot. So we have debates here and there, but, you know, I respect that sport as well, just in general.
What are board games like when you guys play them, or card games, if you do that?
Yeah, she's a big board game person. She loves playing games. I'm pretty competitive. She's competitive. So I try to win as much as I can, but there's a few games that she just kills me at, and it bothers me. I don't know why she's so good, but we go back and forth in there too.
What's her game of choice, board game of choice?
If she had to pick one to beat me in, it'd be Blockus. I don't know if you know what that is, but she dominates me.
Your son Beckham's middle name is Dash. What's the backstory there?
Backstory is Tim Bogar, the bench coach for the Nationals. We were going back and forth. We hadn't picked a name yet. And comes up to me one day and he said, you have to name your kid something fast. And so I'm thinking, I'm like, I don't really want to name, you know, his first name to be whatever. So we ended up picking the name Beckham, and we liked that as a first name, but we didn't know what to do for a middle name. And he came up to me and he goes, you got to name your kid Dash. And I was like, yeah, Dash, you know, whatever. But when we put it together with Beckham Dash Turner, we thought it sounded pretty good in our heads. So we went with it, and now he's got to live up to the name.
You love scavenger hunts. How come?
That's my mom. So when I was growing up, my mom and dad would take us to antique stores, and me and my sister, we'd be bored out of our minds because we didn't care about anything there. We were probably 5-10 years old. And so my parents would make scavenger hunt lists of things that you could find there. And between me and my sister, we'd compete and see who could find the objects on the list fastest. And we did that growing up. And then my mom turned it into a Christmas event every year. So we had scavenger hunts at Christmas. So that comes from my mother, and all those games are her.
A new teammate with the Dodgers you've gotten to know just in the short time you've been with the team.
Me and Max Muncy, I've been talking to him quite a bit, just being at first base and communicating, and he's hitting right behind me in the lineup. So I get a chance to, you know, spend a lot of time with him and been talking to him, trying to get familiar with the team, learn the guys, learn the situation. So I've been talking to him a bunch.
Who was your favorite player growing up and why?
Two favorite players were Griffey and Jeter. Caught a Ken Griffey Jr. foul ball at a Cincinnati Reds Marlins game when I was a kid. So love watching him play, and he could do it all. And then obviously, you know, Derek Jeter was just a winner and, you know, a great player, won a bunch of championships, and he did it all as well. So, you know, I think watching them two play growing up was a lot of fun. And I tried to be, you know, just like them when I was a kid.
You still have that baseball someplace, the junior baseball?
I think I do. It was pretty cool because on the baseball, I had a huge black mark from where he fouled it off, which I don't think I've ever seen to this day. I don't know if it was back then how the bats were, but I thought it was one of the coolest things. I need to find it. I need to get him to sign it.
Some players like to wear their championship ring. Other players don't. They put them away. Where do you stand on that? How often do you wear it?
I try to wear it, but I'm scared. I've probably only worn it maybe 3 times or so since we won it, but I try to keep it in a safe place and not lose it. I'm scared I want to break it or lose it or who knows what. So, you know, definitely cherish that thing, and hopefully we can get another one.
You have a lot of interest in the stock market. What's the background there? What draws you to that?
Just business in general. I think, you know, business is competition 24/7. So I think the stock market and just learning what companies are doing and how to read it and, you know, making the right decisions, I think is kind of a competition. And, you know, you try to be safe and smart and whatnot. And it interests me.
Last one, you have a sweet tooth on Halloween. What is your go-to candy?
Oh, any of it. I'll eat all of it. I'd rather candy than chocolate, but I like chocolate too. So, maybe some Sour Patch Kids or Skittles. I don't know. I'll eat anything. I got a big sweet tooth.
Over the weekend, Kevin Brown caught up with Dodgers manager Dave Roberts.
And we're joined by Dave Roberts, manager of the Dodgers, before Game 2 of 3 between the Dodgers and the Mets. David, a 70-46 season for you guys. You win in extra innings last night to take the first game of the series. What do you like about what your team has done the last couple of weeks?
I like the way I like the at-bat quality. Let me back up. I like the way we're preventing runs. I think that's the reason why we're playing the way we are and have all year and sustained it. We're preventing runs. Starters, guys in the pen, Mark Pryor, Danny Lamb and Connor McGinnis, our pitching guys, are been fantastic. We're catching the baseball a lot better, which goes hand in hand with preventing runs. And I think our at-bat quality has been better. So that's part of it. But again, that narrative can change night to night. But I do think that the consistency of pitching has been kind of linchpin of the success. And we got a good one in Walker Buehler going tonight.
Yeah, it leads the major leagues in ERA right now. It seems that he gets better somehow every year. I'm not sure how he continues to raise the ceiling. In your mind, how does he raise the ceiling?
I think he raised the ceiling, and he's raised it this year by when he's not feeling great, when he can minimize damage, when he can find a way to eke out a quality start, when he doesn't have his best stuff. And he did that his last start. You know, when he's feeling good and everything, that fastball command is there, the secondary pitches, it doesn't matter who he's facing, he's going to pitch well. It's those other games. And he showed that his last turn. So that's kind of part of it. I think he's sequencing a lot better than he has in the past when he doesn't feel well, gets frustrated, just trying to bully guys with his fastball, where I think now he's really bought into the fact is that you still got to keep making pitches.
Justin Turner's missed a few games for you with a groin injury. How's he doing, and is he available tonight if needed?
He's available. He'll be available to hit. I expect him in the lineup tomorrow. Moving around much better. Probably could have been in there today, but with Justin, we just want to make sure that once he does come back, we don't have a setback. You know, he's a big part of what we're doing. So we need him to be right.
Talking with Dodgers manager Dave Roberts before the Dodgers and Mets game 2-3. You've had a week or so now of seeing Trey Turner every day firsthand after seeing him for a long time as an opponent. What have you learned that maybe you didn't know getting a chance to be around Trey every day?
I didn't realize he's just not as physical as you would expect. As far as on stature, I mean, he's tall, he's long, he's twitchy, but he's just not really, you know, he's just not very physical, but he's just such a remarkable talent. He stressed me out managing against him. So to have him on our side, it's almost kind of, I'm just kind of, you know, getting my palms together, rubbing my palms together, saying I got this little toy that I can deploy against opposing managers. But I just think he's one of the most underrated superstars in the game. He can beat you in so many ways with the slug, the hits, the stolen bases, the defense, the arm, all of it. He swings at strikes, take balls, values the walk, just a great guy, great competitor.
Dave Roberts, thank you for the time. Best of luck tonight.
All right, Kim, take care.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Monday. Let's go to Corey Rukert at CoreyR_12. Corey writes in, clearly, Tatis Jr.'s bat is valuable, but is it too valuable for him to play shortstop moving forward? Is a move to a corner outfield spot inevitable for his long-term health?
No. I think surgery is inevitable for his long-term health. He'll get that shoulder tightened up, and then he'll return to shortstop. I do think, you know, that he'll get better defensively after he has the procedure, because it means he can work out. You know, what I was hearing from Padres staffers is that some of his defensive issues early in the year were, in their eyes, rooted because he hadn't gotten the reps that he normally had gotten last year owing to that shoulder problem. In other words, he couldn't go out and take ground balls. He couldn't be as aggressive in doing his work simply because he was spent a lot of time getting rehab on the shoulder.
Toff is up next at TJost14. Toff writes in, will the Cubs win another game this season?
Toff, I don't think you meant that question literally, but I'll answer it literally. Yes, they will win another game this season.
Not many, but they will win another.
Yeah, it's ugly. There's no doubt about it. That's the weekend's action kind of bore out what I was talking about last week about Burns when he had that amazing game where 10 straight strikeouts, and you're like, Oh, it was against the Cubs.
Yep. Exactly.
You know, it's kind of like the Red Sox. Like, I think it's, you know, from the Red Sox perspective, hey, you had a great weekend. You took advantage of the schedule, but it was against the Orioles.
Yep. And you said last week, you're like, who wins the AL East is going to be who can take advantage or most advantage of the Orioles. So there you go. Red Sox back in the mix. Brandon Crouch writes in at Brandon_Crouch. Don't look now, but the Cardinals are 2 games back of the Reds, 4 back in the wild card, and have a better record than the Phillies and Mets. Are you buying their chances?
No. I would say this, though. I think that their schedule is going to be less competitive than that of the other. And I don't know off the top of my head a breakdown of their exact schedule. But when you're in a division where you have the Cubs and you have the Pirates, you know, not necessarily great teams, you're probably going to have some opportunities.
Aaron at Aaron San Diego writes in, I was lucky enough to see Gilbert's no-no Saturday while my dad and brother were in Detroit hoping to see Miggy's 500th. Have you ever been to a game with huge hope to see history and when the history actually happened at a different game or vice versa? You've probably had that opportunity a couple times.
Yeah, but something I'm trying to remember a specific instance of it. Like I went to the game thinking I was going to cover something. And then I'm trying to think. I was at Cal Ripken's record breaking games, 21-30, 21-31. I don't remember anything happening there. Somebody going for 3,000 hits, somebody going for 5 home runs. Nothing really jumps to mind, but I'm sure that as soon as I get done taping the pod, something's going to go, oh, yeah, of course.
All right, we'll close out with Nick the Conqueror at @TNT_17. Nick writes in, is there any doubt the Braves are the team to beat in the NL East? 10 wins out of 12, great deadline additions, awesome run differential. They've got the lead and they've been playing well. And he throws in a little smiley face there to close.
Well, and that, yeah. And believe me, I'm hearing it from my son, the Braves fan, like every game. He's like, yeah, 4-2. I'm getting hourly updates once their game starts. And Dansby Swanson's absolutely killing it right now. You know, Ozzie Albies is getting some big hits over the weekend. They get Travis d'Arnaud back and Noah. I said last week that, you know, I don't think any of these teams are immortal teams, all-time great teams. I don't see any of the Braves or Phillies, the Mets advancing deep into the postseason. However, I do think that the Braves with their championship pedigree in recent years, that's going to carry them through this stretch, and I'm feeling good about the preseason pick for them to win the division.
All righty. Buster hates your favorite team, but he loves the Braves right now. #BleacherTweets on Twitter to let him know how you feel about that. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Yeah. Peter Moylan tweeted out, yeah, Buster's favorite team is the Braves. Because I was like, oh, no, don't get into that. That's it for today. My thanks to Tim, Trey, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.